Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
You're listening to The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. Iran has announced that it's about to break a key part of the 2015 nuclear deal. The deal was supposed to prevent Iran from developing nuclear weapons in exchange for lifting sanctions. But last year, the United States pulled out of the agreement and implemented stricter sanctions. Iran's Atomic Energy Organization said on Monday that its stockpile of enriched uranium will exceed the limit allowed for in the agreement within the next 9 days. That's unless the European Union helps Iran sidestep the American sanctions by giving the country access to international financial markets. The threat is the latest in a series of escalations between the U.S. and Iran. Last week, the Trump administration claimed that Iran was behind attacks on 2 oil tankers in the Persian Gulf, a claim that other countries have not yet confirmed. And on Monday, the president said he would send 1,000 more troops to the region. These escalations track with the conservative approach to foreign policy with Iran over the past few decades, with leaders like John Bolton, the current national security advisor, advocating military intervention over the years. This, of course, was the outcome the 2015 Iran nuclear deal was designed to avoid. I have Richard Nephew on the line. He was an architect of the Iran nuclear deal and lead sanctions expert for the U.S. Also with us is Borzu Daragahi, an international correspondent for the British publication The Independent. Richard and Borzu, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Thank you so much.
Richard, let's start with you. The specifics here in terms of what is Iran threatening to breach as part of this deal?
Yeah, Iran has announced that it is going to basically restart a lot of the uranium enrichment activities that were causing us so much concern. And basically what they're going to do is start making more of the stuff that, with a lot of time and effort, you can eventually use to produce nuclear weapons, which is something that's obviously of concern. It's not something that's going to become an immediate crisis, but it certainly marks an uptick in the crisis.
Now, Richard, I mean, little wrinkle here is that the United States pulled out of this deal. So what does it mean for Iran to breach it?
Exactly. I think this is part of the reason why the international community thus far has reacted with a measure of, you know, kind of calm and understanding here, because for the Iranians, they've actually been pretty restrained. You know, their response to the U.S. withdrawal from the JCPOA, the nuclear agreement last year, was pretty restrained. They didn't do much in response. But now they are starting to restart nuclear activities that were part of the bargain. And I think for the Iranians, you know, they see this as just restating the quid pro quo that was supposed to be in the nuclear agreement in the first place.
And of course, if Iran does start stockpiling enriched uranium, do we have a sense for how long it would take them to actually develop a nuclear weapon, Richard?
We do. So, you know, when we were negotiating the agreement, what we did was set Iran's nuclear program about a year away from the ability to produce nuclear weapons. And that a lot of that time was this issue of stockpiling enriched uranium. And so we are still at a year, even if Iran exceeds the threshold of 300 kilograms of enriched uranium that's supposed to happen in now 9 days. And we'll be pretty far away from that for at least the next few months. But over time, as Iran's stockpile grows, then Iran will get much, much closer. And just as a give a sense of how much we're talking about here, once Iran has about 1,200 kilograms of low-enriched uranium in gas form, that's enough for one bomb if they further enrich it. They'll be at 300 kilograms starting next week, and they can produce about 50 or 100 kilograms per month. So that gives you a sense that we're talking about a 9-10 month process here.
Borzu, the United States announced yesterday that it was sending an additional 1,000 troops to the region. What does that tell us, if anything, about the strategy towards Iran right now?
I mean, it's really hard to discern what the strategy towards Iran is other than means. There seems to be a lot of tools being thrown at it, but there doesn't seem to be an ultimate goal. And there seems to be an administration in Washington that says different things on different days. So I'm going to beg off on, you know, what is the strategy? I think that the U.S. military, on the other hand, does have concerns, legitimate concerns, and they were very explicit about what these forces are for. They're for force protection. They're not a lot of soldiers. The acting defense secretary was very explicit about why these troops are being deployed. They're to protect U.S. assets and personnel in the region.
And Borzu, we also saw another major development recently was this attack on two oil tankers in the Persian Gulf. Do we know whether anyone else besides the United States has confirmed that it was Iran who was behind those attacks?
Well, I don't think that the U.S. has really been able to confirm that they were behind those. I mean, you've had different administration officials claiming it, providing scant evidence. You have whispers, you have leaked photos that show nothing. So I wouldn't call that confirmation yet. You know, very, very likely Iran was behind this attack. They have the means and the motive. And there's, you know, a pattern of Iran doing this kind of thing in this part of the world for many decades. But, you know, other than, you know, Saudi Arabia and the usual suspects, no, not a lot of U.S. allies, traditional allies, have jumped aboard. In fact, you had today Russia, a veto-wielding member of the Security Council, warning the U.S. that it is escalating and that it is on a path towards war with Iran.
Borzu, I'm wondering, do we know what the catalyst was here for tensions between the U.S. and Iran to have heightened so quickly?
I think the catalyst is obvious. The U.S. torpedoed the nuclear deal that had created a sort of modus vivendi, albeit a very uncomfortable one, between Iran and the United States, and then tried to strangle, and is trying to strangle, the Iranian economy, literally and explicitly trying to shut down oil exports to zero, which is a mainstay of the Iranian economy, trying to destroy the petrochemical industry. Iran sees this as an act of war, even if the United States sees this as some kind of diplomatic pressure, and is, of course, trying to escalate the costs for the United States and its partners.
Richard, tensions between the United States and Iran are not new, particularly when we look at how conservative and Republicans have often been pretty hawkish on this issue. How do these recent actions by the Trump administration track with the conservative approach towards Iran over the past few decades?
Yeah, I think that they are part and parcel of a hardline approach towards Iran. Obviously, the use of sanctions, the threat of military force, the efforts to try and interdict and prevent supply of Iranian support to allies in Hezbollah in Yemen and Iraq. So a lot of the tools, a lot of the activities are relatively the same. I think what's different, and this is important, is, as Barzu was saying, the underlying strategy here. Because in the past, under the George W. Bush administration, for instance, there was an effort to negotiate with the Iranians as well, and a serious one, in which we were putting forward potential parameters for talks. Under this administration, we don't have really any sense of that. We've got the 12 steps, very aggressive things that Secretary Pompeo laid out in May of last year that we would demand of Iran, including no more nuclear program, no more missile programs, stopping support for Hezbollah and so forth. But we don't really have a sense that that's been operationalized into a negotiating strategy. It's that absence of a diplomatic off-ramp that I think is the most troubling part of the pressure development, because without that off-ramp, all you have is ever-escalating pressure, and the Iranians are going to retaliate for that.
And Richard, you were one of the architects of this deal. Looking at this today, I mean, is this what you would have imagined when you were working on this 5 years ago?
Only in my nightmares did I imagine that we would be at this point. But actually, the interesting point is this is the kind of crisis the nuclear agreement was intended to head off. A Iranian nuclear program that is steadily approaching a weapons capability while the region is on fire. And we can see right now the risks of that escalation, where U.S. forces are now poised potentially to have to strike Iran. Iran is attacking probably regional shipping and civilian targets. And it's not very hard to imagine this tinderbox, having another match struck. And from that perspective, I think the biggest risk that we see out of the JCPOA going away is that we no longer have control on the nuclear issue, which can make things much more dangerous.
Is there anything that you would have changed in that deal, knowing what you know today?
I think there are three things that are important to bear in mind. One, we might have been able to improve some of the terms, but at the end of the day, the Iranians had their own terms and their own requirements. So it would have been very hard to get too much more out of the agreement. Two, you know, I think we could have offered more sanctions relief for the Iranians to make them a little bit happier with it. But ultimately, it's about getting international banks comfortable with the situation. And that takes time, which we didn't end up having. And third, you know, I think there could have been measures to try and improve the length of the agreement, make it last a little bit longer. But this is where we always hope that we could use the JCPOA as a base on which we could build future agreements. And that's what's most unfortunate about what happened with the agreement now is we don't have that basis in which we could try and build long-term resolutions to these various different problems.
I'd like to play a clip for both of you of Secretary of State Mike Pompeo speaking on Fox News this Sunday.
Trump has done everything he can to avoid war. We don't want war. We've done what we can to deter this. The Iranians should understand very clearly that we will continue to take actions that deter Iran from engaging this kind of behavior.
Borzu, how dangerous is the current situation? I mean, you have Pompeo there saying we've done everything we can to avoid war. There are folks that are saying we're on the brink of war. What's your sense of this?
Well, I don't think we're on the brink of war just because, you look at where the various troops and battleships and military personnel are, and we're not on the brink of war. I remember the first Iraq war and I remember the second Iraq war. But what is very possible is an accidental escalation, as Richard pointed out. There's a tinderbox in the region. One maneuver, one misunderstanding, one lack of kind of understanding the other one's red lines, and things could get out of hand. On the other hand, I think we are in a unique historical moment, and I'm not trying to be cute or anything, but it's really interesting how we don't have a sort of guns of August scenario where we kind of sleepwalk into a war because everyone is communicating on Twitter. You have Netanyahu, Khamenei, Trump, each, in their clumsy ways, perhaps, explaining what the red lines are and so on, and possibly using the modern communications methods that are out there right now in lieu of real diplomatic relations.
I'll be honest, Borzu, I did not expect Twitter to come up in this conversation. Richard, your thoughts on Secretary of State Pompeo's comments?
Yeah, I mean, I think actually the words he chose were very symbolic of what this administration's approach is. He said, we've done everything to avoid a war. We've done everything to deter Iran. He's not at all talking about negotiating with Iran. He's not at all talking about engaging with Iran. All he's talking about is a display of force to compel Iran to back down. And look, deterrence is a key part of managing the relationship with Iran. I wouldn't disagree with it at all. But what we aren't hearing is we are attempting to lay out the terms of a negotiation with this, government, which frankly is what his president has said is what he wants to do. And I think this goes back to a fundamental point. There is a mismatch between what the president says he wants, which is new negotiations with Iran, and what this administration is actually doing, which is pushing the Iranians from an economic perspective to the brink, while at the same posturing for military conflict. And I think this is part of the reason why when Pompeo says, we don't want to have a war with Iran, he may not want to have a war with Iran, but they are not doing the kinds of things required to head that off if we continue to escalate pressure and tension in the region.
Richard Nephew was an architect of the Iran deal as the U.S.'s lead sanctions expert, and he's currently a senior researcher at Columbia University's Center on Global Energy Policy. And Borzu Daragahi is an international correspondent for The Independent covering the Middle East. Thank you both.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.